Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and welcome to What Women Must Know. Thank you for joining me for another opportunity to have a wonderful in-depth conversation about a subject that it is really important you need to know about. And as always, this show is dedicated to empowering you with truthful information so you can make the most informed decisions possible regarding your health and well-being. For those of you who are joining me for the first time, I welcome you to the show. I also invite you to check out my website, whatwomenmustknow.com. There's an opportunity to get some free special reports when you opt into my newsletter. I also send out regular information. These radio shows are sent out to everyone on my list, and always opportunities to keep learning. And also go over to my Facebook page, What Women Must Know, because I do post there every day, and it gives me a chance to add more important information to support you on your healing journey. And as we talk about our healing journey, I am so thrilled today to have as my guest Dr. Louis Aroney, who is the author of the book Change Your Biology Diet. And we're going to be talking about understanding how to change your biology to optimize your weight and well-being. So let me just tell you a little bit about Dr. Aroney. He is an internationally recognized weight management expert and director of the Comprehensive Weight Control Center at the Weill Cornell Medicine and New York Presbyterian Hospital. He is the Sanford L. Weill Professor of Metabolic Research at Weill Cornell Medicine and has an adjunct appointment at Columbia University College of Physicians and Surgeons. Dr. Aroney is chairman of the American Board of Obesity Medicine, the credentialing board for physicians who specialize in weight management. He also helped to develop the VA MOVE program, currently the largest weight management program in the country. He recently launched BMIQ, a unique online weight control program delivered by doctors, nurses, and dietitians. Dr. Aroney has written more than 60 papers and book chapters on obesity. In addition, he wrote a New York Times bestseller, The Skinny, published in 2009. So it's my great pleasure to welcome Dr. Aroney to the show. Hello, Dr. Aroney.
Hi, Cheryl. How are you? Pleasure to be on your show.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you on the show. You've got some fantastic information and research to address this looming epidemic that is happening actually all over the world. I thought a good place to start would be to address what are the most recent statistics and the consequences of carrying extra weight.
Well, we have seen an increase in body weight in the public as well as in women. And one of the interesting things is most people think it's from eating too much and not exercising enough. That's one of multiple factors that are contributing to the epidemic of obesity. So right now, two-thirds of the population is overweight or obese. Now, you could say, who cares? That's no big deal. If people want to weigh more, that's okay. The problem is that following the epidemic of obesity is an epidemic of diabetes, an epidemic of health problems that are associated with obesity. And the best example I can give you of the 50 illnesses associated with obesity, more than 50 illnesses associated with obesity, is in diabetes. Someone asked me to comment yesterday, young reality star has just developed adult type diabetes at the age of 28. At the age of 28. And they were saying, how is this possible when normally people in their 50s, 60s, and 70s develop this? We're seeing this all the time. So this used to be vanishingly rare, and now we see people in their 20s, even teenagers, developing adult type diabetes when they gain a significant amount of weight. So the health problems associated with obesity are being magnified by the weight gain in the population.
What I found really fascinating, because I have been on my own journey to optimize my weight, which I have successfully done, by the way, and I was so astonished to learn that when you start putting on this visceral fat, this belly fat, you actually are creating a metabolic organ, the most active metabolic organ in the body. So this visceral fat is just not, you know, excess blubber that's hanging around. It actually is initiating key physiological functions that impact how the body is able to thrive and support itself to heal and regenerate, rejuvenate, and leading to chronic illnesses. Can you comment a little bit more about that?
Sure. If you look at fat, especially fat inside the abdomen, it plays a critical role. It's in the circulation of the liver, unlike fat that's under your skin, subcutaneous fat. So metabolically, it's very active. And if you look at what happens when you expand those fat cells by gaining weight, is that you start producing hormones that are critical for the normal functioning of the body, but you wind up with too much of them. So, for example, inflammatory hormones, which you need to fight infection, many of them come from fat cells. And if you don't have enough fat, you're more susceptible to infectious diseases. But if your fat cells are too big and you have too many fat cells, especially these abdominal fat cells, you produce too many of these hormones and you wind up with chronic inflammation. You set off inflammation in other parts of the body. And this explains why we see arthritis, for example. You see arthritis of the hands is more common in people who are obese. We couldn't understand how that happened 20 years ago. Now it makes perfect sense, and that is that there's a pro-inflammatory environment in people who have more fat, particularly abdominal fat.
Now, I also understand that this visceral fat not just generates more inflammatory cytokines, but it also produces estrogen, which leads to high circulating levels of the estrogen hormone, which also causes fat storage and inflammation. So have you been investigating that as well?
We don't investigate it, but the evidence is clear that women who are heavier have higher estrogen levels. They go through menopause later because of that. One of the things that we've seen happen in women around the time of menopause who lose weight is they actually can go into menopause. And we believe that the high estrogen levels are one of the reasons why women who are obese are more likely to develop breast cancer. So we couldn't understand how that could possibly be. But the evidence is clear, heavier women more likely to have breast cancer. But now we know that they have higher levels of estrogen, higher levels of insulin, and insulin-like growth factor, which promotes the growth of cells, and higher levels of inflammatory cells and inflammatory cytokine hormones, which have also been associated with breast cancer. So you have three separate processes all coming from too much body fat, and there are undoubtedly many, many more.
So we talked about the visceral fat. What about fat that is stored in other areas of the body, is that as metabolically active or is that something different?
So fat everywhere produces hormones, but fat inside your abdomen produces hormones that tend to be more harmful. Fat under your skin is metabolically much less active and produces hormones and in a different pattern. And as a result, the effect of expanding fat under your skin is metabolically not as deleterious as expanding fat inside the abdomen.
You know, I've been looking at various stories on the internet about people who are trying to get past the myth and our perceptions that somehow there's prejudice against people who are overweight. So there are these people who really fall into the category being obese or running, they're doing yoga. Which is, I mean, it's great that there's a movement to embody people and create greater self-esteem. But I think we have to also understand, and one of the things that shocked me when I learned that for every extra pound of weight you carry, you put 5 pounds of pressure on your joints and your knees and your feet. So we're seeing more hip, knee, feet, ankle problems. Can you comment on that?
Sure. I think that the health manifestations of obesity are really clear, but an issue which hasn't really made it into the public domain, and which I've written about in my new book, The Change Your Biology Diet, is the idea that people who are obese don't want to be obese necessarily. So it's not something that you can completely control. And the problem is it looks so easy. Just eat less and be more active. So people who are obese feel guilty about it. They know it's not good for them. They know it's hurting their health. Why can't they just eat less food? And the answer is surprising to the majority of people, and that is that something physical is going on, something you can't see, something you can't feel, but it is there. And that something is damage to the nerves that carry the signals from the fat cell, stomach, and intestine to the rest of your brain. So what research is showing very clearly now is that eating fattening food and the other environmental factors that cause people to gain weight injures these critical nerves. And as a result, your brain can't tell how much fat is stored and how much you've eaten. And so you eat more food. You eat more fattening food. And what does that do? It damages more nerves. And this causes the vicious cycle and weight gain that we see in our patients. And so one of the reasons that people can't lose weight is that they have hypothalamic nerve damage. And if that doesn't sound like a disease, I don't know what does. But the point is there is something physical going on in the background, and it looks like it's willpower, and that these people just can't, you know, why don't they just recognize that they're injuring themselves? Why don't they do something about it? But it can be really, really hard in the face of the system, which basically becomes imbalanced. So there's a whole system that controls weight. We understand what the hormones are. We understand the wiring. And when that system gets out of balance, it promotes weight gain and makes it very, very difficult to lose weight. That's one of the key problems that people who are trying to lose weight have. Again, I've written about this and explained it in the Change Your Biology Diet because we don't want people to feel guilty. We want them to recognize that they have to do something about it. And right now, we don't have that many things to do. But so you've got to fight it. And we, as healthcare professionals, are there to help them to fight it. But if you just sit there and say, oh, my God, there's nothing I can do, this is a disease, that is not the attitude you need to overcome your weight problem.
And that's why I think the research you've been doing in the Change Your Biology Diet is so profound because I'd like us to spend a little more time talking about the hypothalamus. I think this is a very, up until recently, very neglected component that has played a major role in our metabolism and certainly has contributed to impaired metabolism when our hypothalamus is under stress for many causes. So why don't we first explain what the hypothalamus is, because I don't think most people really know much about it if they've ever heard of it at all. So we can kind of introduce people to an important part of their brain called the hypothalamus.
Sure. The hypothalamus is part of the brain that is intimately involved in weight regulation, in temperature, body temperature regulation, thyroid function, and many others. And basically, all the signals that you send from your stomach, your fat cells, your intestine, hormonal signals, electrical impulses, go through the hypothalamus, and then they spread out to the rest of your brain. So everything goes through this one critical area. And what we knew is that if there's any damage to parts of that area, that in studies you could have tremendous weight gain. An example, if someone gets a brain tumor in that part of their brain, and the brain tumor is removed, damaging the area, they get ravenously hungry and they just can't stop eating. The reason is that the rest of their brain can't tell how much they've eaten anymore because the connection's been severed by the surgery. And now what we've recognized is that the exact same thing happens when weight is gained. The nerves themselves that are in this area get damaged. They get inflamed, and they don't work well. And as a result, the hormonal signals that are being sent aren't received properly in that teeny-weeny hypothalamus and can't get through. It's hard for them to get through. And that produces obesity.
So the cause of inflammation is the result of what, environmental toxicity, an inflammation condition going on in the body, other factors? I understand the hypothalamus is very vulnerable to toxicity and stress.
So what's been shown, the thing that's been shown most clearly, is calorie overload. So in studies in mice, if you give them fattening food, what happens is the nerves get damaged and they stop functioning. And inflammatory cells surround damaged nerves, and we think that provides almost a physical barrier to the critical hormones getting in there. So one of the things we've recognized over the years, and we've actually shown this in research studies, that your brain becomes resistant to the critical hormone that comes from fat cells called leptin. Leptin does not work. If you give it to a normal weight mouse, they lose weight right away. But if you give it to a mouse who's eating fattening food and has gained weight, it doesn't really do much. And we think that that difference is caused by damage to these nerves and inflammation.
So is that what is known as leptin resistance in people
who
are
overweight? That's the cause of leptin resistance.
Yeah, so it's like the cells get tone deaf. Leptin should be giving you the message that you're full, but when you have too much being generated, then it is like going tone deaf. The cells just don't hear it, don't receive it, don't open to it.
Right. That's correct.
So can you repair this?
Well, that's a great question, and you can improve it. And we think that going on a good, healthy diet minimizes damage and gives the repair mechanism time to catch up. So that could happen. And again, we talk about this in the Change Your Biology Diet, that exactly how this could be helped. We've done studies where we've given nerve growth factors. We find that might turn out to be helpful someday, but it's still too early to be using those things as treatments. But I think that it is possible to make this better. So a lot of people find that when they go on a good diet, they lose their appetite. And now we know why that is. It's because the system may work better when you're on a really healthy, low-calorie diet. So your brain can tell and says, wow, there's so much fat there. I don't know what to do. I don't need that much fat stored, and it reduces your appetite.
You know, that's so fascinating. And, you know, I'm a naturopathic doctor, so I always am searching for natural solutions. And I've been investigating the hypothalamus, to be totally honest, so I find this such a fascinating and important conversation. Have you explored the use of hypothalamus support, glandulars, natural products that actually have been known to support and optimize hypothalamus function?
No, we have not. Have you?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
And what happens?
Well, I don't use it in isolation. I use it as part of a protocol, but I've gotten great results. with my patients. So I think this area of understanding the role of the hypothalamus that you are talking about and promoting in your Change Your Biology diet is a really critical conversation that needs to be happening, which hasn't really happened very often before, especially in the traditional medical world. Do you agree with that?
Well, I think that it's, forget the medical world, it's the world in general. I don't think people have been willing to recognize that weight is a serious medical problem that needs more aggressive management. So it makes me laugh when I watch these shows on TV where they're just yelling at people, and on the one hand they're starving them to death, and then they try to have them eat cookies and see if they'll eat the cookies. So that's like one form of treatment, and that's entertainment.
Sounds like torture.
It does. I mean, but people watch these shows like crazy. So who am I to criticize them? Because you know, the viewing public watches it. Like, to me, as a professional in the area, I think that's inhumane. It's not what I would do to our patients. And so I think a completely different approach is necessary. People always ask me, you know, given my many positions, you know, why are we not able to do anything about this epidemic of obesity? And I tell them that it's because we're not doing the right things. We're doing things that, you know, scientifically don't make much sense. And that is a big part of what's going on, that the wrong kinds of treatments are being delivered. And so if someone doesn't respond, is it because they can't respond or because they're, you know, the wrong thing was done? And, you know, in my opinion, so let me give you an example. There are many medications that can cause weight gain, and it's almost impossible trying to get people to lose weight if they're taking these medications. So that's an example. We see about 15% of the population is taking a medication that causes weight gain, and it's very hard to get those people to lose. And, again, Change Your Biology diet. We talk about the medicines so that people can be informed about what will help.
Can we talk about some of those meds? I think that's really important since we're such a medicated society. We know that antibiotics can alter your gut biome. We know that Prozac, for instance, can impair your thyroid. Can you elaborate more on some of these medications that people may not be aware of that are directly impacting their metabolism?
Well, the most common is probably the over-the-counter sleep remedies, which have a strong antihistamine in them, and the PM products. You know, something PM. All of these have a strong antihistamine, and the antihistamine can make it difficult to lose weight and can promote more weight gain. Now, that's the kind of thing that we are dealing with on a daily basis. We find that if we can switch somebody from a product like that to something like melatonin, we can see weight loss.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an example of something that the average person could try. Does melatonin work in every case? No. But we've had patients who took less of the PM product and they took some melatonin, and that can help. So there are many ways this can be managed. But there are medicines for many different illnesses that can cause weight gain. The ones that are most commonly prescribed are for depression and for other mood disorders.
Mm-hmm.
Medicines for diabetes can cause weight gain. There are some that cause weight gain. There are others now. Fortunately, we have diabetes medicines that can cause weight loss. And if you combine them and you take people off the medicines that were causing them to gain weight, it's amazing how much weight someone can lose. So a common scenario we see is patient is referred by their endocrinologist or their physician, and they have been trying to lose. They can't. They can't comply with a diet. Everybody's yelling at them. And we'll look at their medical regimen, and we'll see they're on a diabetes medicine or two diabetes medicines that cause weight gain because they produce more insulin. And what we'll do is wean them off that. We'll put them on one of the newer medicines that actually helps them to lose weight. And voila, all of a sudden, you have someone who's lost 40 or 50 pounds. That's a common scenario. Blood pressure medicines can do it. Again, a number of different areas can promote weight gain.
Wow. How do blood pressure meds cause weight gain?
Well, the medicines called the beta blockers, which cause less or slower contraction of smooth muscle, which is the type of muscle that's in your arteries and your veins that causes them to relax, and it makes your heart pump less forcefully. That's how it lowers blood pressure. But it also slows down the contraction of your big muscles, your skeletal muscle, and that slows down your metabolism ever so slightly. So there are studies showing that if you look primarily at people with diabetes, that if they're put on a strong beta blocker, that they tend to gain weight. There are other beta blockers that don't cause the weight gain, and there are other medicines for blood pressure. There's a group of medicines called ACE inhibitors and angiotensin receptor blockers, which are very commonly used, that don't cause weight gain and may promote an improvement in metabolism. So we'll take somebody who has been, again, someone who's gaining weight, they were put on the beta blocker, and they're doing their best. Everyone's usually yelling at them to do something, and we change their blood pressure medicine. And voila, all of a sudden they're slowly losing. Now, this doesn't happen in everybody. I don't want you to think that everyone who comes in here, we have some miracle cure, but this is the medical or obesity medicine approach that we've pioneered that is now becoming very popular around the country.
Can we talk about the role of hormone replacement in it as a medication, as a drug that actually contributes to fat storage as well?
Sure. What would you like to?
Well, I think people are not aware that hormone replacement therapy or even some forms of the pill can lead to weight gain. And as we're listing some of the factors and medications, I think that's something else that we need to appreciate has a potential to increase your weight.
It's yes. So primarily the progesterone we find is the cause of this. But any strong progesterone can be associated with weight gain. In fact, very strong progesterones are used to help people to gain weight. So that's how we began to understand this. But hormone replacement therapy, when you look at the problems that have been seen with hormone replacement therapy, in my opinion, it's primarily because of the progesterone component and the weight gain associated with taking the progesterone. So, you know, it's complicated, but that really, in my mind, if we go back and look at why were there problems with this, what you'll see is that people gained weight even though they were taking hormone replacement therapy, and, you know, it's possible that that's one explanation for the issues that evolved.
You know, and as we're talking about all these factors, and there are even more, which we'll get to, you know, I think everyone can really appreciate it. It's a very complicated process. You have to really do some in-depth investigation to what's going on in a person's life and their lifestyle factors and medications and their emotional state. And, you know, it's not just about dieting and exercise anymore, if it ever was.
Right. Well, that's part of it. And so we're not trying to minimize that and say that that's not part of it. But the key point is that there are other things going on in the background that someone may not pay attention to, and that's what could be key. So, for example, in the Change Your Biology Diet, I write about a study that we did this year, and this is one of our recommendations to people. We did a study where we took people with diabetes, and what we did was we changed the order of eating carbohydrate, vegetables, and protein. On one day, we gave them a big piece of bread first, followed by chicken and vegetables. And the portions were roughly the same. And then on another day, we gave them the exact same number of calories of the two. We gave them the chicken and vegetables first, followed by the bread. And what we looked at was their blood sugar and their insulin levels. And what we found was that on the day we gave them the bread first, their blood sugar doubled, went from about 100 to 200 in 1 hour, and then it started to come down. And on the day when we gave them the exact same meal, but we gave them the chicken and vegetables first and then the bread, their blood sugar went up only 25% over an hour. It went up to 125, and then it gradually increased over the next hour. The amount of insulin it took to get that result was one half of the insulin to get that much worse big surge in blood sugar. So we think we've solved one of the great mysteries of dieting with this approach, which is, you know, how could you eat carbohydrate? Many people do well on a low-carb diet for a period of time. And then they go back to eating carbs, and they can't stop eating. And if you look at studies, if you can lower insulin and you can prevent this surge in blood sugar, you can actually, you'll find that people eat less food. So the bottom line is, if you eat your vegetables first, followed by protein, followed by carbs, we found that you can lower your blood sugar, lower the insulin, and that will help you to stick with the diet. And one of the interesting things now, writing about this in the Change Your Biology Diet, is that, so 2 weeks ago I did an interview on CBS, on the morning show, and I was talking about this with Charlie Rose and Gail. And I was interviewed this week by a talk show host from Chicago. And he said, you know, I saw you do that on TV. I started doing it. And for the first time in my life, I've been able to control my eating. I never thought to do that, but all of a sudden, I don't feel as hungry, and I'm able to stick with, you know, a reasonable diet. Like, that's the kind of thing that we're seeing, that there are simple ways for people to do a lot better. That's what we're trying to do, is find things that the average person can do without having to be followed around by a chef. You know, like that, a lot of the things that I see out there as diets, it's just impossible for anyone to do. Here we have something that anybody can do. It's the exact same food you were going to eat, just eat the vegetables and the chicken first and have any carbs at the end. So those are the kinds of things we've been interested in, and I've put in the Change Your Biology Diet that I think, you know, your listeners can really get the benefit with some simple changes.
You know, that is so profound, because all you're saying is just rearrange the order of things, and it can have huge implications in how your body is responding to blood sugar. So is that because you think people are eating less carbs at the end of the meal? Do you think it's because having your protein particularly helps to stabilize your blood sugar a bit more? Or what are your thoughts about why you have such a dramatic reduction?
In this study, they ate the exact same number of calories in both meals. Everybody
says,
oh, did they eat less carbohydrate when they had the chicken and the vegetables first? That was not possible. We made them eat the exact same amount of food. Now, it could turn out that people do that anyway, that they eat less of the carbs. But the fact is that even if you make them eat the whole thing, there's no question it's much, much better. So we're looking into why that is, what hormones are released. But we think that there are several things that happen by having the vegetables and protein first. But many people know that if they could stick with a diet that's a lower-carb diet, they find that they do well. They lose weight. They feel better. But the problem is doing it in the long run, because eventually you start to develop cravings for sweets or starches. And it turns out that there's a physical mechanism that's rigged to do that. So if you don't eat enough calories, your body starts throwing different ideas at you to try to get you to eat something that's going to make you gain back the weight that you just lost. So this is a rigged system. And what happens if you eat the vegetables and protein first, is it allows us to sneak in the carbohydrate, so you get the satisfaction of having it. You get the satisfaction of having it without having the metabolic consequences. So if you're on a low-carb, you know, paleo diet, the Dukan diet, the South Beach, the question has always been, how do you get off those and onto something that's more reasonable without having a tremendous increase in your appetite? And the Change Your Biology diet is the answer. So we think that we have, so everybody who's on a diet right now, you're losing weight, things are going well, this is what you need to do afterwards in order to continue to succeed.
So you pass on the rolls, you have your pasta at the end of the meal, you don't sit there and roll it up while you're eating your meatballs, you know, you wait and have all that at the end after you go.
Yeah, I mean, again, I would like to not eat carbohydrate at all. I know it's much better for me, but
yes,
something tells me to eat it. Cheryl, come on, doesn't your body tell you to do that sometimes? Makes you want that stuff?
Sometimes, yes. Less than it has in the past, because if you reduce your carbs, you're less addicted to them as well. So that gets, you know, that's helpful if you're reducing it. What about breakfast suggestions on your Change Your Biology diet program? What is your optimal recommendations for breakfast?
So we think that, once again, if you can't stick with a plan with what you're eating now, and if you're eating oatmeal, if you're having cereal, you're having a donut, that even if it's a calorie-controlled waffle, you know, patients come in and they tell me, like, I have one of these, little waffle for breakfast with low-calorie syrup, but I can't, you know, that's fine, but the rest of the day I can't, you know, I'm eating everything in sight. That is what's driving your brain crazy. And if you switch to protein for breakfast,
yes,
you can have a big impact on what you eat later in the day. So it's been shown that having protein for breakfast reduces your appetite later in the day compared to having carbs. How much? Well, on one of the best studies ever done, they gave either instant oatmeal or eggs for breakfast. And what they showed was that later in the day, on the day that these young men had instant oatmeal, they ate 80% more later in the day than on the day they had eggs. Same guys, different day. These are the kinds of studies that really help us to understand what's truth and what's fiction. But what do you think about that? Just changing what you ate for breakfast, same number of calories in both. On the day they had instant oatmeal, they ate 80% more.
Well, so we need to change our cultural habit of having cereal and carbs as a breakfast food, really. It's not healthy for us.
Well, for some people, it may be fine. But for other people, it's not the right thing. But one problem is that you don't know. And people get so ingrained to see the advertising for it. Or how about children? Cereal for breakfast to children. I grew up at a time when, you know, having Rice Krispies for breakfast. Everybody, that's all you had for breakfast was Rice Krispies if you didn't have toast. You know, could things like that be contributing to the obesity epidemic? And the answer is sure. That's entirely possible. That along with caloric beverages. So that's another thing. I'm sure anyone who's listening to the show doesn't drink their calories, but that's another easy way to get rid of hundreds of calories a day, is just to make sure you don't have any beverages that have calories in them. People tell me, well, I don't have anything, I just have coffee. Well, if you go to Starbucks in New York, Starbucks has calories, the calories listed. And I'm amazed at the number of calories in some of the beverages that they serve in a coffee place like Starbucks. So you have to be careful to see exactly what's going on, what's going into what you're drinking.
And you're a big fan of the Mediterranean-type diet and the use of olive oil. So I thought it'd be really good to help people understand why this is a recommendation in your Change Your Biology diet book.
Well, when you look at what diets have been shown to help people live longer and healthier lives, the number one thing, it has been olive oil and nuts. So this got to a point where researchers in Spain did a study where they took people and one group got a lower fat diet and the other group got a Mediterranean type diet, which has more oil in it. And they actually gave them oil. They gave them extra, they gave people in the study extra virgin olive oil, or another group got big bags of nuts, several pounds of nuts. They're supposed to consume that every month, and they go back to the clinic and they get another big gallon of olive oil or nuts. And so they consume these extra calories of either olive oil or nuts. And what the study showed was that the people who were in that group were less likely to have a heart attack or stroke over a period of 4 years. And it was just it happened instantly. As soon as the research study started, within weeks, there were fewer heart attacks and strokes in the group having nuts every day or having olive oil every day. So that's the kind of research evidence that makes it, I don't want to call it incontrovertible, but it is very, very strong, recommendation for olive oil and nuts. You know, there's no other way to do a study that's going to show a better result than that.
So olive oil is preferred over the seed oils, such as flaxseed oil or, sesame seed oil or, the normal seed oils, that people should primarily be using olive oil with their meals and on their salads or vegetables, whatever. Focus more, increase the olive oil and reduce the other seed oils. Is that what you recommend?
Well, it's hard to say whether those oils, they could be of benefit, but we don't have the proof that they're of benefit.
Yeah.
Here, we have proof that the olive oil is better. Now, is that the only oil you should have? No. Can you have other stuff? Of course. But in the study, they used olive oil for salad dressing. They used it for cooking, and it showed this great result. So, again, I don't want to tell people they shouldn't have these other seed oils. I'm sure that there are health benefits to using them, and if people prefer that, that's great. But, you know, we're getting to a point now where we're beginning to be able to do research that really helps us to have insight into what people should eat for a healthier life. But there's a saying in nutrition research that, you go on this diet and you may not live longer, but it's going to seem like it's a lot longer because it's so boring. You think about, some of the diets that are out there, and they're very, very restrictive. And, the most important thing is for people to have an enjoyable life, eating food that they enjoy. And so, that's the most important guiding principle when it comes to dietary prescription, is make sure it's something that people enjoy. But we find that people, when we put them on diets like the ones we use, the one I write about, and the Change Your Biology diet, that they like the food. We're not telling them to do anything that's so drastic that they have ruined their lives, that they just can't function anymore. Sometimes you do have to do that, though. Sometimes you do have to really make a big change to your diet in order to be successful. But most of the times, it's these subtle tweaks. Maybe you need to do something drastic for a period of time, and then you go to something like the Change Your Biology diet in the long run, and you can do very, very well. And that's what we've seen. This is the approach that we use at our center here at Weill Cornell Medical College in New York City. We run a weight management center for 25 years. We see people from all over the world. We see people with very severe weight problems, and then we see people, here's a kind of specialized example, we see people gaining weight while on chemotherapy for breast cancer. And the breast cancer specialists tell them not to gain weight, and why don't you try to lose weight, but they're gaining weight, and they're losing their minds. It's very upsetting. And what we find a lot of times is it's the medicine they're being given by the breast cancer team that's making them gain the weight. And so we negotiate with them and try to come up with a better regimen, or we'll actually give them weight-losing medicine to prevent the weight gain. So, you know, it shows that there's a lot more going on here than meets the eye, Cheryl. This is not obesity, weight gain, not as simple as it seems in every case.
And really, you know, we use the word diet, but you're talking about understanding more about your body, understanding more about your biology for long-term optimal weight, for weight loss, to maintain your weight, and obviously to enhance your health long-term. This is, you know, what I hear what you're saying is we can just put some of these suggestions into place, we can get some huge gains. And not in pounds.
That's right. Gains in health. Improvements in health.
So, right.
Yes, I agree completely that, you know, you don't have to ruin your eating life in order to do this. You know, I think that eating good food is very important. A lot of people, I don't tell people about this very often, but I was one of the people who was there at the beginning of the Food Network, TV Food Network. So I started back when Emeril Lagasse and his other chefs started, and we were there to balance out all of the eating programs. So my show on the Food Network focused on healthy eating and other things that you could do to keep your weight in control. And I think that it is. I learned a lot about food, a lot about cooking, but the point is that it is possible to enjoy your food and also control your weight. I really do believe that's possible.
Absolutely. Why not? We have so many great choices these days. We just have to know what they are and what order to eat them in to get the best results and support our body. And before we wind up this conversation, we have to talk about exercise, because that's another important piece of the puzzle, but it's so fascinating what you have been advocating in your Change Your Biology diet that I think is really encouraging for most of us who really want to use exercise, but we need to know how to use it in the best way to get the results. So can we talk a bit about exercise?
Sure. Exercise plays a critical role in good health. The important point is you don't have to do a massive amount of exercise to get the benefit. The benefit really comes from going from doing nothing to doing something. And that could be as little as 10 minutes of walking a day, 15 minutes of walking a day. That can help to improve your metabolic parameters. And there are now 10-minute exercise regimens that are out there doing something like calisthenics. You know, as little as 10 minutes a day can improve your metabolic fitness. What's the best thing to do? And in my opinion, strength training, resistance training to build muscle is one of the best things that you could possibly do for yourself. If you're doing aerobic exercise, you're on a treadmill for an hour a day, and you're not getting anywhere, it may be because your muscles getting a little bit too efficient, and if you do resistance exercise, that can help you to do better. Because again, muscle, when you do just aerobic exercise, your muscle begins to figure that out, and it gets increasingly efficient, burning fewer calories, and you need to stimulate it in a different way, and resistance exercise is a very good way to do it. So the program we go into in the book is a very simple resistance program that anybody can do at home, and it's a program that won't injure you. A lot of people say, well, I can't lift weights, I could get injured. We have a program that is very slow weightlifting and will not injure people who perform it.
I just think resistance training is so important, especially for women, because we tend to lose muscle mass. We always are at a deficit with muscle mass anyway compared to men, and then we start to lose it the older we get, so we get all those flabby arms and just, you know, we just start getting flabby, but which is which women hate. But it's more than that. When you lose muscle mass, you are losing your ability to have a healthy metabolism. You're losing your ability to have healthy bones. And we really need to make that a priority, as well as you were saying, it supports our metabolism in a big way. So I've started doing that, and I've gotten a lot of fantastic results in terms of building muscle mass, which we can build muscle mass at any age, right?
That's right. So if you're not doing any resistance exercise and you start to do it, you're going to have more muscle mass.
And, you know, the other thing that you write about, and it's a big concern to me because I spend a lot of my day sitting in front of my computer. I mean, hours can go by before I come up for air. And we know more and more how dangerous it is to be sitting so many hours a day. So I'm trying to put some, time throughout the day. I live on the 19th floor, so I make an effort to walk down 19 steps, you know, two or three times a day. I don't necessarily walk up 19 floors, but I walk down as a way of just keeping moving, right? It's just, this is really important, isn't it, to move throughout the day?
Yes. So moving throughout the day. You know, one of the things we do here at the Comprehensive Weight Control Center is we stand. We try to stand as much as we can when we're seeing our patients. Standing burns three times as many calories as sitting. So that's a great way to increase the number of calories you burn. It's a great way of strengthening your legs. And people say, oh, my legs get tired. Well, if your legs are getting tired from standing, it's because you're not doing enough standing. You're not doing enough physical activity.
Wow. So do you have like one of these standing desks that you work at as well?
No. No, if I'm typing, we'll sit down. But when we see patients in a clinical encounter, one person will be sitting there typing, and the other person will generally stand. So that's since we have residents, fellows, we have people who see patients, we see patients together, that's how we do it.
That must be interesting for your patients to see their doctors standing.
Well, we explain it to them.
Good.
So they don't feel like we're trying to run out of the room.
So can I ask you, what's your success rate with your program and your practice?
You know, our success rate is, we don't keep statistics on that. One thing is that everybody we see has a medical problem, has failed. The average patient, the average woman patient, weighs well over 200 pounds. The average man weighs over 250 pounds. So we see people with medically significant weight problems, and they have generally failed traditional kinds of treatment. They are on the border of requiring surgery. So that's a tough group to treat, but we get the effectiveness nonetheless. And we have another group of patients who we see, and those are people who've gained weight or really need to lose weight for a health reason. And the example I gave before, a woman with breast cancer who is gaining weight, you know, someone who's 120 pounds and they come in, they're 155 pounds. They've gained that much weight in a short period of time. That metabolically is very, very significant. And even though that person is not, you know, up to our standards of treatment, again, because we treat people with medically significant weight problems, we consider in somebody with cancer that is significant weight gain, and we would manage patients like that. With women with breast cancer, we do extremely well. We have very high success rate. And we do otherwise, but I can't quote your number.
Right. So in the last few minutes that we have for this conversation, is there anything else you want to touch upon?
Well, I think that in general, that there are ways for many people to lose weight. And I think that much of the population is demoralized about losing weight. That's why they're not interested in it. If they could lose weight and they could eat comfortably, they would do it. And I believe that a lot of people haven't done it because they feel they have to make too big a change in their eating, or they're not going to feel comfortable when they do it. And that discomfort that you feel is a physical discomfort. It's your brain telling you that something is going on and that your weight, there's not enough fuel stored. And the approaches that we've developed can help your brain to feel comfortable and not be as hungry, not have that kind of gnawing feeling in the pit of your stomach with very, very simple and straightforward approaches. So we put that into the Change Your Biology diet so that for everybody, I liken it to coming to see us at our center. You know, we know that everybody can't come to see us and benefit from the specialized diagnostic approach that we have. But by reading the book, you can get a lot of these tips. I mean, we didn't have time to go into sleep. Sleep is a huge problem. If you're not sleeping enough, you're hungrier. So getting more sleep is critical. You know, the classic thing we see is someone sees that on TV, they recognize sleep's problem, and what do? They get one of the PM products that has a strong antihistamine in it, and then they gain even more weight because the medication makes them gain weight. So, you know, these are the things where you need somebody who has some expertise to help you to understand what it is and how to fix it. And, you know, I believe the Change Your Biology diet will help a lot of your listeners out there to sort out what their problems are.
Well, I am sure that your book, which, again, is called The Change Your Biology Diet, will help a lot of people because you really give a lot of the latest research, as we've talked about today, and you go through the various options. You give meal plans. You know, give them practical solutions that will really help them make the adjustments required to support their biology. And I think that's just such a critical piece that you're contributing in this area of understanding what's generating weight gain is understanding our biology and what really will support it to function optimally, support a healthy metabolism, and strategies that we need to be incorporating. So I really want to thank you for the work you've done and your contribution to this huge problem and the hope that we actually can make simple changes, like putting those carbs at the end of our meal can make a significant difference in our weight. So thank you so much for the wonderful research and the wonderful work you're doing, and thank you for being on the show today.
You are welcome, and thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Oh, you're very welcome. And we've been talking to Dr. Louis Aroney. He is the author of The Change Your Biology Diet. Pick up a copy. It will really profoundly support your journey to optimal weight and optimal health. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman. You've been listening to What Women Must Know. Thank you for joining me today. And remember, always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.